Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Hold on to your hats. The drones are coming. New regulations on the commercial use of drones, also called unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs, went into effect this week. What does it mean? Is that the next book that we order online, coming by air? How will journalists use drones? Will our privacy be at risk? Let's get the lowdown from some folks close to all of this. Ravi Sahu is the CEO of AirZar. His firm provides software for commercial drone operations. Ravi also runs the St. Louis Commercial UAV Drone Meetup Group, which has 193 members. Joining us by phone is Matthew Waite, Professor of Mass Communications at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. Matthew founded the Drone Journalism Lab at the university. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, happy to be here.
This certainly does enter a new era as of this Monday. Ravi, let me begin with you, then we'll turn to Matt. What does this new regulation mean?
Well, the new regulations, what is called as a Part 107, and it really has removed the barriers to do a commercial drone business. A lot of the barriers were that you have to have a pilot license to start operating a commercial drones. That has been removed. Now you can go and take a certification test in any authorized FAA test centers, and you can get up and running with your drone and do a commercial business. There are so many other rules has been uplifted, which is taken as a very positive note in this industry.
Well, what are some of those rules? What are the most onerous from your point of view?
One of the biggest rules that has been came up is you have to have when you are taking operating a drone. One of the things that you need to do is. You have a 333 exemption, and for 333 exemption, it takes about 6 months, 3 to 6 months to process it. But now with 107, you just apply online, take a test, and you can get up and running. The couple other items is you still have to go through all the knowledge related to aeronautical knowledge about operating conditions. But one of the biggest thing is now, under 55 pounds, you can, if you are under 55 pounds, you can pretty much take that and operate in any environmental conditions.
Those earlier numbers you gave me, the 303 or whatever they were rules that you had to abide by or tests that you had to take, something that was slowing down the process of getting a license. Is that it?
Yeah. First, the biggest concern was you have to have a pilot license when we are approving, applying for a 333.
Now you don't need that anymore.
No, you don't need to.
Okay. Yeah. Let me turn to Matt. And Matt, what is this going to mean for journalists? They are commercial enterprises, so they'll be anxiously awaiting the opportunity to use drones more than they have heretofore?
Indeed. The interest in journalism is wide. We had a drone boot camp here at the university a couple of weeks ago, and we had news organizations as small as weekly newspapers up through international news brands that were all here wanting to learn about this. What are they going to be able to do? Well, in simple terms, they're going to be able to get perspectives that they weren't able to get before. Drones are very, very good at providing compelling video of news events that are large in scale. There is a lot of examples from the flooding down in Louisiana going on right now. Different national broadcast networks have used drones there to show people just how bad that flooding is, and it's a perfect example of what's in the offing. But also coming is news organizations going to use them at every car crash and house fire and community festival down the road, because it just is sort of an interesting look at it. Now, whether or not they should use them at those is a whole other question, but it's going to happen, at least in the near term.
And this this change in the rules and regulations this week is certainly going to make it easier for news organizations to use these things.
It is going to make it easier, but I would not say that it's going to make it easy. The test of aeronautical knowledge is just enough of a hurdle that it is going to make it a more specialized skill within newsrooms. It takes a fair bit of study to pass that test. there is a fair bit of knowledge that you need to know. So it's not like news organizations are just going to start stocking these in the newsroom and just let anybody grab them and take them. There are substantial issues involved, and licensing is, it would take a little bit of work on the part of the person. But compared to what it was under the previous rules, it's going to open it dramatically.
Well, we had one of our representatives from St. Louis Public Radio with you the last week or two, and chomping at the bit to find a way that we can use it. So everybody is interested, needless to say. Let me turn back to Robbie. Give me some sense of what the commercial application is going to be. Everybody's been hearing about Amazon being able now to deliver books by drone, and that was the desire and that was the anticipation. Give me some other applications.
Sure, yeah. The public perception for the drone, commercial drones, you know, it's pretty much is given as a delivery drones, and that's because that has been publicized more. But the drones is really a fantastic tool for any business, you know, to incorporate major insights. Other commercial industries who are using it's construction, mining, landfill industry, energy and utility, where drones are solving some of the biggest problems, and then surveying, and then a lot of disaster recovery. Those are on the humanitarian side, but the commercial industry, which is adopting at a rapid pace, where they are just incorporating this as a tool, just like, you know, you have a computer, you have a trucks, or you have an equipment in your arsenal, they are using it as a tool.
How do you use it? I mean, how does your company plan to use it?
Yeah, so what we do is we provide, ARZR provides software for drones, and to operate, you know, to build sustainable operating conditions. And then once the data has been acquired, you can analyze the data from that applications. And this the construction industry, we go for construction, mining, and energy and utilities.
Well, this move this week then has to be a tremendous boon to you and to your company.
Yeah, absolutely. This has opened up a way not only to incorporate drones into your business, but now it has speed up the process of utilizing drones on your day-to-day operations. So there are commercial applications. The construction industry is using it to monitor their site for how much inventory that needs to be ordered on a daily basis. They are using drones for that. Mining industries, they are using as use cases to calculate stockpile volumes by flying over, using to fly over the drones. So there are tremendous applications.
Right. Matt, let me turn back to you because another issue that pops up, less so with the commercial application that I've been talking about with Ravi, but certainly with journalism and law enforcement, and that is the privacy issue. How are you looking at that?
Carefully. These are areas of law that have been fairly unsettled for a very long time. And there's sort of two areas that are interrelated that come up, and they are privacy on one hand, and then there's private property on the other. The issue of how much airspace over your property you control is not a settled matter of law. The FAA in nationwide asserts jurisdiction over the airspace from the, you know, the top of the blade of grass in your lawn all the way up to the end of the sky. Whether or not you own a piece of the air above your property and can keep drones out of it is actually something that has not been settled in court. This goes back to a Supreme Court case that was handled after World War II. Involving a chicken farm in North Carolina that was essentially the vehicle that established the national airspace. That ruling never quite said how much airspace you control. It just said that people should be able to control the immediate reaches of their environment. So that's one area that comes up. Privacy is another one. I think people have, I would say, an overblown fear that these devices are going to fly up to their windows and peer in, because they're fairly large and they have blinky lights on them and they're not quiet. So if you think that one's going to sneak up behind you, you ought to go see one actually fly. But people are sort of uncomfortable with the idea of a drone flying over their backyard and photographing them, not necessarily realizing that airplanes can do the same thing already from 500 feet up.
Or satellites.
Satellites up there. I mean, I have told many people that I don't need a drone to see what's going on in your backyard. There's many other ways that I can do that. The fact of the matter is, unless you're a mayor and have just committed a triple murder in your backyard, nobody cares. There's not anything interesting going on in backyards. My backyard is boring. The interesting parts are where we start flying these drones lower and they begin to agitate people, or they begin to fly in areas where people do have a legitimate, reasonable expectation of privacy. What happens then? How does our existing privacy law apply?
Well, let me just raise this issue here. The movie star who is in her pool in the backyard and the drone run by the local paparazzi are flying by and taking pictures.
Well, in California, there are laws already in place to try to stop that. They're generally under provisions of anti-stalking law, believe it or not. But whether or not those will pass constitutional muster, whether or not that is an infringement upon First Amendment rights, is an issue that's unsettled. I think something that people have to do is sort of take a longer view of this and realize that the technology adoption curve in the United States sort of goes like this. Technology is introduced, we all freak out, everybody and their brother gets sued. Courts sort of sort this out against our constitutional principles, and by the time they've done that, we've already moved on to something else and wondered what the fuss was all about. The perfect example of this is the Kodak Brownie in the 1890s. People flipped out that you could take a camera to a beach and take pictures of people and they wouldn't know. Our whole notion of privacy law in the United States actually came about after that. But by the time that all came about, and by the time those laws started going on the books, people had fallen in love with portable cameras. And drones are going to be the same way. There's going to be some rough times. There's going to be some lawsuits that happen, and there's going to be a lot of news written about it in the near term. But we'll eventually sort that out. We'll be able to square those with First Amendment principles, with Fourth Amendment principles, with state law, and we'll wonder what all the fuss was about here in a relatively short period of time.
That's Professor Matthew Wade of the University of Nebraska at Lincoln. We're talking about drones and new regulations which are permitting a more widespread use of them. Also with me in studio is Ravi Sahu, CEO of AirZAR. I'm going to come back and talk with him about some of the things that we've already discussed with Matt, and we'll do that in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation about drones with Matthew Waite of the University of Nebraska, Lincoln, and Rabbi Sahu, CEO of AirZAR here in St. Louis. Rabbi, back to you. Are there any privacy implications as far as you can see with regard to the commercial applications that you're working on?
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that commercial applications, the privacy concerns are the use of the data. A lot of the businesses who are capturing the data, it may misuse. So that's definitely the concern on the commercial side. And the way I see, and I agree with Professor Matthew here, there is a curve of adoption in the technology. And the way to look into these privacy concerns are to build a better technology so that we are better protected, and the technology solves that privacy. So the use cases like geofencing and the drone itself come within capabilities not to go into an area where it's closer to the Capitol building. So those are the things needs to happen, and in terms of the technology.
What about the issue of safety? One gets the impression there are going to be a lot of these things flying around. A lot of different companies and organizations will be using them. How is that addressed in these regulations?
So FAA has taken a very robust approach and a step-by-step mechanism to address into this area. Safety and privacy is one of the big areas that they have come up with that you, even though if it's 55 pounds, but you're not supposed to fly that in a sparsely populated area. So that's one of the, you know, they're avoiding those by that, you know, rules and conditions.
Excuse me, so they are not to be flown in a sparsely populated area or a heavily populated area?
Yeah, heavily populated area. Yeah, sorry. So it's the rules are defined well, and that's the education is required, you know, to follow that rules, and every commercial jobs has a different set of requirements and has a different set of you know, use cases. Considering the rules with the specific situations is very, very required.
Yeah. Is there any chance that these things are going to be bigger than 55 pounds? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen drones which you can fit in your pocket and which is bigger than this 5x5 room. There are, and it has a different use cases. So on the commercial side, it's on the little bit on the heavier side that we see.
Answer this for me, if you will, because I've wondered about it since I first heard about it. How does Amazon deliver a book to my home? Does it fly the drone to the front door and ring the doorbell, or drop it off as it's flying by? How is that possibly going to work?
Yeah, that's the question. I'm still wondering, how they are doing the whole supply chain and logistics. And the way that I foresee in the future is there will be a base stations developed in different locations. So it's not going to, at least for the near 4 or 5 years, it's not going to be directly knocking on your door and delivering your book, but there will be base stations where a drone drops the package and somebody collects that package and do the last mile delivery. So what I think from the delivery perspective, we are not there yet, even though there is lots of excitement there on the delivery industry.
Matt, as you have indicated, we really are at the very, very first stage of this and learning how to use it.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are many, many issues that we have not thought through, and this delivery area is one of them. For people imagining a drone is going to land on your front sidewalk and send you a text that your stuff is there, I mean, think of how many people own a dog, and a dog that's not going to let a flying whirlybird leave the lawn after it lands there. Or if you want a little bit more of a graphic example, think of a child that knows that their birthday present is being delivered, and they're going to run out all excited and go reach for it. Those blades are not going to be kind to little fingers. And it's that last mile problem that is some of the thorniest issues. Frankly, there are a lot of things that we haven't thought through, and which is actually sort of baked into the FAA's approach here. They have said from the beginning that this is going to be an iterative process, that these rules now are going to change because they're going to learn things. They're going to learn if drones can operate in certain airspaces. They're going to learn if 400 feet is an appropriate altitude, or they're going to learn about new technologies that will allow flight over people in more heavily populated areas, like what types of backup systems would be required to make that safe. Technology is going to change far faster than regulation is. It's just a fact of life. But the FAA has said already that even as these were coming out, that they are already working on changes that may come as soon as by the end of the year.
It sounds like an admission that the cart has been put before the horse on all of this.
I would say, actually, that the horses have been so far removed from the cart that the cart couldn't necessarily see where the horses were. This is the cart catching up to the horse. The FAA has been very behind on this compared to a lot of other countries. Countries like Australia, England, Chile, Mexico, Canada, all have had better rules in place for UAS and have jumped out ahead of the United States in terms of the allowance of experiments and innovation to go on there. That this had to happen. This had to happen for a lot of reasons. But the United States has been behind. The reason why the first pizza delivery by drone was in New Zealand is because it's possible there under regulation, where in the United States it's not. Amazon's first experiments with drones met so many headwinds with the FAA that they just moved their research and development office across the border into Canada and did them there. So it's important to understand that these rules are good, and in the acknowledgement that they're going to change is good, but this has been a long time coming.
Ravi, what's your take on that? Are you following along with what Matt is saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more here. We noticed that, you know, we are behind here as compared to other advancements that has happened in different countries, and there is a reason, because FAA understands here that, you know, U.S. Aviation is a little bit more complex than any other country we have at any given point of time. We have so many airlines and the communications going on, and not to drill onto that, but the technology has advanced so much rapidly than the rules, and the rules needs to be designed accordingly. We're still at least 3 years behind that, what has been currently adopted, and the businesses are already doing that.
What would you like to see as the next step in this whole process?
So two big things that needs to happen really quickly if you really want to get a return on investment of the drone technology into the businesses and the commercial applications is one of this beyond visual line of sight. At this point of time, you cannot operate beyond visual line of sight if you are doing a farming, mapping of a farming and a precision agriculture job. It's only a 3 miles. And so that's one of the things I would like to see at a rate of the adoption.
A broader distance,
yes,
a wider
distance. Uh-huh. And second thing, again, it's there are lots of jobs that has required daytime, nighttime operations, and that's again not in the current FAA rule.
Only daylight.
Daylight and twilight. So twilight is basically 30 minutes before and after sunrise.
Right. And Matt, as we close this down, what would you like to see as the next step? I'm going to assume that it's having laws catch up with the technology.
Well, yeah. My big issue for journalists is routine operations in controlled airspace. Currently, you have to request permission from air traffic control to operate within 5 miles of any airport with a controlled airspace down to the surface. The way that that's done is you apply for a waiver, and that waiver goes through an online system that goes to FAA headquarters. That's going to make covering breaking news very difficult in cities, where some of these other regulations, these safety regulations, are workable. That one's very difficult. So that becoming more routine and more instantaneous, I think, is necessary. I would also like to see more on required safety equipment to operate within urban environments. What kind of redundancies does the FAA expect to have or will mandate, indeed? Because then you'll see a lot of innovation go on in that space that will allow more regular and routine operations in tighter quarters.
Well, clearly there's a lot of work yet to be done on all of this. I want to thank you both for being with us. Matthew Waite at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln, thank you. Ravi Sahu of AirZAR, thank you for being with us. Good luck with your enterprise as all of this unfolds. Great to have you both with us. Thank you. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.